Prabhupada ki jai. Okay, we are reading from the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 25. And the verse up there is not the verse for today, because the verse for today is text 3. Om Namah. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Aho Shri Mada Mahatmyam Gopanam Kananakasam. It's text 3 in the 25th chapter, 10th canto. Krishnam Marjam Upashritya Ye Chakro Deva Helanam. Aho Shri Mada Mahat, Aho Shri Mada Mahatmyam, Mahatmyam Gopanam Kananakasam. Krishnam Marcham Upashritya Ye Chakrur Deva Helanam. O Shri Madam Mahatmyam Agopanam Kananakasam. Krishnam Marcham Upashritya Ye Chakrur Deva Helanam. Aho Shri Mada Mahatmyam Gopanam Kananakasam. Krishnam Marcham Upashritya Ye Chakrur Deva Helanam. Okay. First line is Aho Shri Mada Mahatmyam, not Mahatmyam. It's just the rules of sounding there in Sanskrit. Anyway, so Aho, just see. Shri, because of opulence. Mada, of intoxication. Mahatmyam, the great extent. Gopanam, of the cowards. Kanana, in the forest. Okasam, who dwell. Krishnam, Krishna. Marcham, an ordinary human being. Upashuja, taking shelter of. Yay, who? Chakrahu, have committed. Deva, against the demigods. Helanam, offense. So, translation. Indra said, just see how these coward men living in the forest have become so greatly intoxicated by their prosperity. They have surrendered to an ordinary human being, Krishna, and thus they have offended the gods. So purport by the servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Of course, Indra was really saying that the coward men had offended him, Indra, by taking shelter of Krishna, whom Indra considered to be a marcha, a mortal. This was certainly a gross miscalculation on Indra's part. Hoshimada Mahapyam Gopanam Kananaukasam Krishnam Marcham Upasritya Yechakrur Deva Helanam. So Omaganati Padandasha Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Unmiritam Yenatasmai Sigurve Maha. So what we see here is an instance of what we call Atmavat Manyate Jagat. And I'll explain what that means. Atmavat Manyate Jagat. That one actually sees the whole world in terms of oneself. Atmavat means Manyate, the mind, Jagat, universe. Actually, not just the world, the universe. In other words, what this verse really means is that one ascribes to different living entities the same motivation, same mentality that one has. This is really interesting. And actually, as they say in English, there's some difficulty, there's a miscommunication, or we have miscommunication. Just like you have sometimes, this is interesting, sometimes between men and women, that's sometimes. One is saying one thing, and the other one is thinking they're meaning something else, right? Doesn't that happen sometimes? Just like there was this interesting book one time that said that men are from Mars and women are from Venus. So they're speaking different languages, but they think they understand each other. That's a sannyasi's perspective. But in any case, when we see someone doing something, we think that someone is doing something for the same reason that we would be doing that particular thing. Like, for example, if one sees a great devotee eating prasadam, one is actually thinking, oh, he's enjoying his senses, right? But the great devotee may be just worshiping Krishna, thinking, oh, Krishna is so kind, he may be completely absorbed in Krishna. That's why it says that no one should try to understand the mind or intelligence of a Vaishnava, isn't it? Charyamam, Yamiyam, Navamandi, Dakari, Chitamarchu, Bujusuyeta, Sarva, Devam. So, anyway, so we tend to look at people and think they're doing it for the same reason. Especially it's dangerous when you're dealing with Krishna's great devotees. And we found that sometimes people would criticize Prabhupada, either because he got angry or because he did this or that, because they didn't understand what was going on in Prabhupada's mind and consciousness. So this is a great problem. So Indra here is really saying, in addition to saying that Krishna is just marcha, or a mortal person, which is certainly a great offense, as Krishna says in the Gita, avijananti mam bhutat, that those who actually think that I'm a ordinary person are asses, Krishna says. But in addition to that, Indra is actually talking about himself. He has become so intoxicated by his prosperity. And of course, Indra has great prosperity. And, you know, not only prosperity, great power, great respect. And he gets angry quite a bit when he is not properly respected. So he demands this. And because of that intoxication, Nunam Pramata, Purute Vikarma Yalindriya Priti Aprinoti, as Lord Vrishabhadeva says, one becomes crazy. And he does crazy things. I mean, just like, for example, Indra, being greatly intoxicated by his prosperity, decided that he would have a relationship one time with Ahalya. Here's the story from the Ramayana. And Ahalya was married to Gautama Rishi, a very beautiful girl. And so Indra basically came down to the earth planet. And when he came down to the earth planet, what did he do? He took the form of Gautama Rishi, as Gautama Rishi went to the river to bathe, and he had a relationship with Ahalya. And of course, Gautama Rishi comes out, and what does he do? He finds someone else looking like him, and that's actually Indra. And he gets very angry, and as a result, actually, he basically curses Indra to become impotent at that point. And then he curses his wife, as we know, to become disincarnate. Actually, the story of the Tulsidas Ramayana is not correct. She doesn't become a stone. She becomes disincarnate like a ghost. And she just hangs around that area until Shiram comes. And Shiram saves her, and she takes her again, her form, and goes back to join her husband. So in any case, Indra really has problems at that point. And then, because he's too lusty, just like the word used here, it's a very interesting word, mada. So from that word mada comes madan. You know madan? Madan means Cupid. Because he's, so that's referring to Indra. Because he's too lusty and he can't live without enjoying his senses, he gets a transplant from, I think it was a ram or something like that, or a goat. Just like Prabhupada described, that many times the men, when they get old, they get so lusty. In the past, they used to take the monkeys from Vrindavan and take off their glands and transplant the glands onto their body. I don't think they do that in Fiji, do they? You'd have to go to Australia for that. So Indra's just like crazy. I mean, sorry, you gotta be careful. Anyway, at least at this particular point, he's crazy because of his prosperity, intoxication. And then other times, when Prithu Maharaj was performing different horse sacrifices, Indra kept stealing the horses. This is a story from the Bhagavatam. Indra kept stealing the horses, and when he was stealing the horses, Prithu Maharaj sent his son to try to rescue the horses from Indra, because Indra was stealing the horses dressed up as a sannyasi. And each time, Prithu Maharaj's son, was able to take back the horse, and Indra was able to escape because he dressed up as a sannyasi. And of course, Prithu Maharaj's son didn't want to attack a sannyasi. You're not supposed to attack sannyasis. And because Indra was so upset that Prithu Maharaj was performing horse sacrifices, because he understood that if one performs 100 horse sacrifices, he gets to be Indra. So if you want to be Indra, that's how you do it. You perform 100 horse sacrifices. Of course, that's prohibited in Kali Yuga. And then other times, another story about Indra just being intoxicated and offending Krishna was the story of Naranarayan Rishis. Narayan Rishis, they were performing austerities because that's Krishna, Narayan, and Nara. Nara means like a human being. So that's Arjuna. So whenever Krishna appears, Arjuna appears with him. So you have Krishna and Arjuna appearing as Narayan Rishis. And so what happened is as they were performing austerities, Indra was thinking that they were performing austerities to take over his kingdom. He gets very upset. And so Indra came down to try to agitate the senses of Narayan Rishis. And the way he did that is he brought some of the Heavenly Society girls with him. And they were dancing in front of Narayan Rishi. And he also brought Springtime with him, you know, and Cupid. Cupid is called, incidentally, Ananga. Ananga means he has no limb, he's invisible. I mean, one reason for that is that he was burnt by Lord Shiva one time. Lord Shiva got very agitated that Cupid was trying to agitate him. So he just burnt him to ashes, therefore Cupid's invisible. And he has arrows of form, taste, smell, you understand, all the different objects of the senses. Touch, all these different objects of the senses. Taste. And he shoots these arrows when you're least expecting them. You understand? That's called Madan. Madan means Cupid. And so when he shoots them, you become crazy. And even, as we've mentioned many times before, when one falls in love, the medical equivalent is to taking cocaine. If you don't believe me, Google it. The brain scan is exactly the same. You can actually do that. Those of you who work in the hospital, you should do that next time you find someone falls in love. Take them into the MRI. And you'll see what I mean. So that's called, anyway, it's called Madan. And so, anyway, so let's just finish the story about Indra here, and then I'll talk about Madan in general. So so then Indra brought forth Cupid in Springtime, and Narayan Rishis, they just yawned. Basically, they said, is this all you got, Indra? Because Indra was trying to lure them into giving up their austerities. And then Narayan Rishis did something simply amazing. They created a more beautiful girl than all of Indra's girls. You understand? And that was Urvashi. Urvashi is famous, of course. She's the ornament. And there's many stories about Urvashi, which we're not going to get into. So she's the ornament of all the heavenly planets, basically. And even when she had to leave the heavenly planets one time, she got married to an earth guy, Ururupa. That's another story from another time. Indra was upset and brought her back immediately. So anyway, Prabhupada comments in this regard, it's just like if one is manufacturing sweets, one is not interested if someone offers him some sweets. In other words, if you go to the, I don't know if you have that word here, but it's called affectioner, confectioner. Confectioner means one who makes sweets. It's a fancy word. So if you go to this sweet shop and you say, can I give you some sweets? He'll say, no, this is stupid. I make them. So in the same way, Krishna is the manufacturer of all the beauty in this world, so he doesn't get bewildered. So, anyway, that's another instance. So let's talk about Madan in general. That is Cupid, which is actually hinted at here. Madan. Aho Shri Madan. Mahatmyam. That someone has become bewildered greatly because of intoxication of pride or intoxication of lust. And so we have, very interestingly, the deities of Madan Mohan, not here, of course. But Sanatan Goswami, the great Acharya of the Sambandha Gyan, has installed the deities of Madan Mohan. What does Madan Mohan mean? Madan Mohan means the person who attracts Cupid. And that was shown by the Narayan Rishi story. The person who can attract Cupid and control Cupid. And of course, we also know that Srimati Radharani is known as Madan Mohan Mohini. The person who can bewilder the person who attracts Cupid. That's pretty good. The person who controls the person who attracts Cupid. So, in other words, to overcome this sort of intoxication with pride, and, you know, last week I was speaking a lot about pride and how pride goes before the fall and so many problems like that, we have to approach Krishna and be attracted by He can take care of Cupid. Actually, Prabhupada sometimes would say, call Cupid Mr. Lust or Mr. Cupid. He'd give him a, who is a mystery? He is a mystery, actually. And so, we have to go to Krishna. What does it mean to go to Krishna to be freed from the intoxication, from lust or pride? It means we have to see the beautiful form of Krishna. Once one sees the beautiful form of Krishna, then you sort of lose interest in everything else. It all becomes boring. Like, if you're still attracted to the forms of this material world, like a young girl attracted to a young man, a handsome young man, or a young man attracted to a attractive young girl, or anything like that, that means you're not seeing Krishna. Because if you saw Krishna, it would appear to you like a frog. Like the demigod. I mean, it's a higher standard. Like, for example, sometimes I give this example. Like the demigods, you know, they generally look upon us because they're in a higher level. And we look like frogs to them, or worse, cockroaches. Isn't it? I mean, comparison. Because let's talk about the demigods. Their bodies, there's no sweat. There's no smelling bad. There's no gray hair. There's no losing your hair. There's no, what else? There's no injuries. There's no hospitals. There's no ugly people. There's no overweight demigods. Right? Doesn't exist. I mean, they're all men, women. I mean, they are attractive. And they look at us in Fiji, you know, we have diabetes and heart disease, and, you know, and even young people losing their hair there. You're young, right? How old are you? What? 16? Anyway, whatever. I mean, it's just like, they look at us and it's just like, yuck! Generally. Except that there's some exceptional cases, like Ahalya, you know, she was pretty exceptional. Or, what was that? One story. Yeah, anyway, there was another story. Oh, Damayanti. You know the Nalan Damayanti story? No. I'm not going to tell. But if the demigod, she had her swine bar and the demigods all came down to get married to her. And Nal, he was just an ordinary earth guy. He got married to her and the demigods got so upset that actually Kali just almost destroyed his life. But that's another story. I won't tell the story of Nalan Damayanti today. So anyway, so that's, you know, that's relative. That's relative. Because in the different species of life, there is attraction, like the male frog attracts the female frog. You know, he sings, right? The frog, you know, the...
Ribbit.
So if a man, one of you young men goes ribbit, none of the women are going to be attracted to him. But if a frog goes, then the frog ladies, they go, ha, he's my husband. I love him. Anyway, but then when you take a comparison in the spiritual world, and Krishna is there, Krishna's beauty, and then, huh, how can you get attracted to anything in this world? I mean, not only men, women, but, you know, attraction to anything. It's just like, it's a reflection. It's just like a mirror reflection. It has no substantiality, and it's all temporary. So that's how you conquer Mada. You go to see Krishna, you hear about Krishna, and you associate with devotees who have conquered Mada or lust. And you serve the devotees who have conquered Mada or lust. Anyway, so getting back to Indra keeps making this mistake over and over and over again. Like with Vishwamitra Muni, he sends Menaka to try to get him to stop his austerities. Then he sends Ramba later on to deter Vishwamitra Muni. So many stories about Indra. And however, we find that Arjuna, here's an interesting story from the Mahabharata. Arjuna was able to conquer lust because of his dedication to Krishna. And he was confronted with the most beautiful girl in creation, that's Urvasi. You know, when Arjuna went up to the heavenly planets to get weapons so he could fight with the Kurus, then we know that he was learning dancing, because later on he would be Brihadnala. And as he was learning dancing, Urvasi was watching. And she thought, wow, he looks really good. And what happened is that she knocked on his door one day. I don't know if they have doors in the heavenly planets, but she knocks and he said, who's there? And she said, it's me, Urvasi. And I love you. And he said, Mataji. And when he said, Mataji, that was it. She got really angry. And the reason he was able to do that was because of his dedication to Krishna. And also his understanding that Urvasi was his great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmother. Did you know that? Because they're going back to that story of Kururava and Urvasi. That's an interesting story. I'll tell that maybe in a second. That Kururava, he was a king on the earth planet, and Urvasi was in love with him, and she came down to be with him. And what happened is that Kururava was asked by Urvasi to sign a prenuptial contract. That means a contract before you get married. And the contract was that she would never eat anything, he would never feed her anything that wasn't cooked with ghee. Because in the heavenly planets, there's no oil, especially no soybean oil like you eat. It's disgusting. Isn't it? Everything's cooked in ghee. So, you'll never serve me anything not cooked in ghee, Urvasi demanded, and I'll never see you naked, and you'll protect my little pets. She had pet lambs. And Kururava said, of course, whatever you like, my dear Urvasi. Okay, and so what happened is that after a while, they mentioned Indra wanted her back in the heavenly planets. And what he did is he sent some of the Gandharvas down on a ship or something like that. And they stole the lambs in the middle of the night. And Urvasi got really upset, and she chastised Kururava, you're just like a eunuch. He runs out, captured the lambs, and he doesn't have his clothes on. And they, the Gandharvas, they have sort of like a spotlight, and they shine it on him. So there he is in the middle of the field, completely naked. And so she sees him, and then she goes back to home, back to Indra. But Pururava is so lusty. I mean, this is a problem with lust, that he can't live without her. Can you imagine that? That's mada. That's craziness, intoxication. And so he goes, starts wandering over the whole earth. You know, oh, Urvasi, feeling your separation, I'm considering a moment like a yuga. People are crazy. Instead of saying about Krishna, I'm experiencing Krishna's separation. I want Krishna. You know, volume, intense hankering, which is the price of pure devotional service. We're going after some stool-filled body. Whereas Urvasi didn't have a stool. She had a heavy body. But anyway. So, but, you know, it's like we're chasing it. It's like, oh, like dogs. Isn't it? Anyway. Sorry about this. Anyway, so he goes around the earth, and finally he finds her, you know, doing some holy calls. And she agrees, okay, once a year you can come and see me. She agrees. Okay, he says, okay, great. So the rest of the year he's just counting down the days. You know, like you have a calendar and you cross out each day as a or you like in prison. Sometimes the prisoners do that on the wall of the cell, they just cross out. And so he's counting out 365, 364, 363, 362, 361. Anyway, I'm not going to go through countdown the whole thing. And then he meets with her and he says, oh, I can't stand it anymore. The whole year without her. And that is what lust does to you. And then what happens after that is she says, okay, perform this sacrifice and I can be with you all the time. And but actually, they produce somehow a clone is produced of her, and he's not satisfied, and he gets so upset that ultimately he starts to perform a big sacrifice, because it's described as the, it's interesting, it's the change of the yugas from Satya Yuga to the Treta Yuga. You know, in Satya Yuga, meditation is the authorized process, so if you're in love, you meditate on your beloved. The story from the Bhagavatam is not, I'm not making this up. And then, Treta Yuga, you do a sacrifice for your beloved. So the yugas change, and he starts to do a sacrifice, meditating upon the one piece of wood being him, another piece of wood being Urvasi, Swaha, Urvasi, Swaha. And then he goes back to home Urvasi, to be with Urvasi. I mean, people are crazy. I mean, why do we have the four regulated principles? To keep you from being crazy, apart from the karmic stuff. You know, someone asked me yesterday, why do we have gambling? What's wrong with gambling? I said, because it causes a fever. Krishna says, of all cheating games, I'm gambling. It causes a fever. You go crazy. Intoxication. You go crazy. Illicit sex or illicit life. You go crazy. Isn't it? People are crazy. I mean, people fall in love, and then sometimes they, if their beloved leaves them, they drink poison, right? In Fiji. Doesn't it happen all the time? It's a common thing. It's crazy. Why are you going to drink poison? Just come to the temple and chant Hare Krishna. Become intoxicated with the holy name. Isn't it? Why is he drinking poison? I mean, who cares about some stupid guy? Sorry. Isn't it? Who cares? You've had so many stupid guys from so many stupid lifetimes in this world. In the last lifetime, you were the guy anyway. Last lifetime, you were the stupid guy. And it's like, I'm the stupid girl, you know, so it doesn't matter. So anyway, so people do, it's crazy, isn't it, taking poison? Just because a boy doesn't like you? I mean, if I took poison every time someone didn't like me, I'd be dead a million times over. Isn't it? Who cares? The whole world out there. So anyway, so that's talking about the four regulative principles, you know, intoxication. And of course, eating meat. Prabhupada commented that eating meat makes you crazy, because one time he was talking to some Russian people and they said, we eat meat to become as strong as tigers. And it makes people crazy and violent. Like, you actually see the cultures where people are eating meat, they're much more violent. India, for example, which traditionally there hasn't been meat eating, now there is. There was never, amongst the Hindus at least, there was never a war fought to propagate religion for the Hindus. You know, there were other wars, you know, fought for religious purposes. It's practically, you know, Hinduism, of course I'm using the word in a broader context right now. Let's say Sanatan Dharma. There's been no wars fought to force people to accept Sanatan Dharma, right? Or, you know, Krishna consciousness. The real Sanatan Dharma is Krishna consciousness, not some organization. And every other religion has wars fought to convert people, right? Because they're eating meat. If they'd stop eating meat, they'd be peaceful. So in other words, these four regulative principles make, if you break them, they make you crazy. And our business is to become sane, not crazy. So, on that happy note, any questions or comments? So Indra here is crazy, acting crazy. So I got to be careful. If I offend Indra, then one day I'll be in a big storm, in a tsunami. So any questions or comments? Nunam kudute. Nunam pramata kudite vikarma yad indriya priti apramati. So the statement is, nunam pramata kudite. So if one is attached, indriya priti, the satisfaction of the senses, then one becomes crazy. Nunam pramata. Pramata, it means very crazy. So here Indra is acting crazy. He's attacking God and thinking that God is a material body. But you can't get any crazier than that, right? And Krishna's so attractive. And so he has to get a good lesson here later on in this particular chapter. Questions or comments? Yes, we can do that. Yeah. A great offense. Yes. Yes, that's his compassion, his mercy. To forgive, because basically because he apologized. Now, not only was he actually criticizing Krishna, but he tried to kill all of Krishna's devotees. Now, if that's not a mad elephant offense, I don't know what is. You know, we talk about, you know, blaspheming the devotees of dedicated their lives to propagate the holy name of the Lord, first offense. But actually, worse than blaspheming them is to kill them. I think it's like 100 times, million times, billion times worse. So he's trying to kill Krishna's pure devotees, the most dear, deep, dedicated devotees of Krishna he's trying to kill. And he gets forgiven. Wow. That's compassion. Of course, he did apologize. So, yes, Krishna's mercy. Actually, Prabhupada said many times that sometimes Krishna may forgive, but the devotees don't forgive. Or the dust of the feet of the devotees don't forgive. You understand? Sometimes even the devotee forgives, and it's described the dust of the devotee's feet. It's just that, still angry at the person. Dangerous. I mean, it's like when Lord Vishnu was offended by Brihamuni. Lord Vishnu forgave him. But who didn't forgive him? Does anyone know? Who didn't forgive Brihamuni? Lakshmi. Lakshmi was so upset that she left Lord Vishnu. She said, "You're too compassionate." And she cursed the Brahmanas to be poor. She said, "My dear husband, you're too soft-hearted. I'm going away." And poor Lord Vishnu, he had no money. Because Lakshmi left him. But that's another story that we can tell another time, how Lord Vishnu was looking for Lakshmi and came down to the earth planet, wanted to get married, had no money for his marriage. So he had to borrow money from the treasurer of the demigods, Kubera. Okay. Anything else? Any other questions or comments? Nityananda? You're happy? And smile if you're happy. Anyway, this is nice, Krishna Katha. So tomorrow we'll continue reading about this particular pastime. And some of the verses here have very short purports, so maybe we'll go through a little bit more quickly rather than just staying with one verse. So, I guess that's it. We'll wait to greet the deities in about 2 minutes. All glories to Svan Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Bless him on there. Whoops.